Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Sports Radio 610 presents former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley. It's Clint Sterner and the Show.
Yeah, a beautiful Friday, Clint. Tyler Milner producing this. I'm Ron the Show. We got a lot to get into today. Hey, stay with us. Justin Verlander, you know him. Astros pitcher who is right now slated to be out for the year with Tommy John surgery. He is speaking to the media. We will have what he had to say, a meeting with the media around 2 o'clock. We'll have exactly what Justin Verlander has to say, so make sure you stay with us and we can let you know what was on his mind. But the big thing here with the Texans is their draft and their quarterback, and how important is Davis Mills, and how will he be used, and how will we see him in 2021? James Palmer, NFL Network, had some thoughts on that.
So we thought with the 67th pick, so many needs on this team, where would you go with it? Well, quarterback is a bit of a surprise, but they had a smaller board than they've had in the past. They earmarked a couple of players, and this was definitely one of them. If they struggle this year, which many believe, you can get a chance to see Davis Mills probably play in the tail end of this 2021 season. And if you trade Deshaun Watson at any time between now and the trade deadline in October, you have an opportunity, guys, to be able to go see what this guy can do this season, perhaps, and have that play into how you're thinking about your quarterback position in 2022, because you still don't know probably at that point where it is going to be standing.
So where is this, Clint? I mean, with Davis Mills, the quarterback they took in the third round with pick 67, this has been up and down. We heard from Mark Ross yesterday saying that it doesn't really matter what he does. It shouldn't really cause any thought of what you do the next year. Then we hear James Palmer. How much does Davis Mills play? Can it factor in your decisions for next year?
Look, I'm leaning more towards James Palmer and his opinion and of what Mills or more so how Davis Mills' 2021 season will impact the 2022 draft for the Houston Texans. I think it'll impact that decision in a major way, any way you slice it. I mean, we don't have to guesstimate on this show. We don't have to guess of whether it will or not. We can look at last year and look at the way Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia, how his being drafted in the second round of the 2020 draft ultimately impacted all of the decisions that the Philadelphia Eagles made this year in the 2021 draft. Not only did he play late in the season, not only did he really – I thought what he did was show, hey, he's worth investing in and moving forward with him as the young quarterback that's getting serious consideration on your roster. I didn't think that he did anything that blew anybody's mind. That in itself shows me that if an organization like Philly can deal with Jalen Hurts and the draft the way that they did last year, I don't know why in the hell the Texans wouldn't deal with it in a very similar fashion. And I'm not saying the Texans should do what Philly does. And I'm not saying that that Davis Mills is Jalen Hurts. I'm saying as we know it right now, as we see it right now, the two teams took quarterbacks second, third round. They may or may not play a little bit, half the season, maybe a quarter of the season. In any way you slice it, it's going to impact what the Texans do in the draft next year with their first round picks.
I mean, it has to, right?
It has to.
Like when they made the decision to take Davis Mills where they took him, you make that decision with the thought of we're going to at least give him a chance to be the guy for us. Like at least give him a chance to see if we could do that.
I mean, that's the ceiling for the decision.
Yeah, I mean,
right? You make the decision and go, okay, best case scenario, this dude shows us in a year that he is a legitimate starting caliber quarterback in this league. And I don't mean that physically. I think he can spin it. We've seen guys, like I think he can spin it. He can spin the football. He is a better passer of the football than Jalen Hurts is right now. And Philly decided to take him in the second round and decided that he could play over Carson Wentz and decided to trade Carson Wentz and keep Jalen Hurts. I think it's a very similar situation that we can look to show how Davis Mills should be treated throughout the season and how he could possibly impact next year's draft. I think when you draft him in the third round or when you draft Jalen Hurts in the second round, at that point in time, it's a crapshoot. It's a roll of the dice.
But it's something you got to see.
But it's something that you got to see it through.
Yeah.
For a year, you got to go, hey man, this is a possibility. This is our best right now. This is best case scenario. Davis Mills gets a chance, proves in one way, shape, or form to the Texans that he's a guy worth investing in the future, and you use those draft picks in the first round accordingly with other positions because you have a slew of other needs. That's best case scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you got to be wishing for that, right?
Yeah. As we're talking here about Davis Mills, how much can his season coming up impact the next year's draft? And listen, now he doesn't have the same leash as even a second rounder or a first rounder. His leash might be this year to see exactly what you have to not make the decision.
It is, bro. It's all he's got. His leash is 365 days long. Yes. You know what I mean?
So it's not as long as if you took as long as a leash as Mac Jones has. Mac Jones has 3-4 years of a leash.
Correct.
Right? Because of where they drafted him. But he's getting a chance to be the starter to try to say he's going to be the guy for the Patriots. So the same way with Davis Mills with the Texans. He's going to get a chance. It's just he's got this year to show it. You just can't make that pick without him at least having the thought process of, all right, we make this choice. This is our because this is our first pick in this draft. It's the first draft pick we made in the start of our rebuild. We got to at least give him a chance to see if he can be the dude. And you don't make – this isn't a fifth-round pick. This isn't a sixth-round pick where you're like, all right, this dude could be.
I wonder how many times show in the NFL there's been quarterbacks drafted, and I don't care what order, but like first round, third round, or third round, first round, or second round, first. Like, you know, that close in the draft, that caliber level of athlete, level of player, and them drafted bang, bang. The one I can remember I know happened the same damn year was when Washington drafted RG3 and Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
I thought Kirk Cousins was the better player. I thought Kirk Cousins would last longer in the league when that particular pick was made. And now it's unfortunate that I was right, but it's unfortunate that it came at the expense of RG3 getting injured. I hated to see that. But when that, to me, that was stupid. That was absolutely, I mean.
The latest is what, Kyler and Rosen?
Well, yeah. Now that's when I don't blame. Like, I love that kind of aggressive move because Kingsbury didn't draft Rosen, right?
Yeah, no, no.
Is that right?
No, he didn't.
He didn't. Okay, so he came in and he cut bait with a quarterback that didn't fit his system because there was a quarterback coming up in that draft that was an absolute perfect marriage. So that was a great bang bang. Let's cut bait. Let's
move on.
There's
a lot of the reason why the GM for the Cardinals fired the coach after 1 year and brought in Cliff seeing what they had the number one overall pick and
sure.
that Kyler was there, that marriage.
Sure. It's going to end. I don't know if they're going to end up winning a damn thing because they ain't even been 500 yet, I don't think. But when it's all said and done, that is a roll of the dice that I'm here for that. Cliff Kingsbury, one of the air raid gurus, and Kyler Murray, one of the best. I don't know, there may not even be a close second, but he's the most productive air raid quarterback ever, possibly. I'm here for that marriage to see if it'll ever work in the NFL. But that's not, I mean, to me, it would be criminal if the Texans didn't look at Davis Mills right now and go, okay, and we got 365 days to develop this kid and figure out everything that we can, put him in every possible situation and see exactly what we're dealing with, and then we will draft accordingly. I mean, to go, well, we're just going to take a quarterback in the top five if we have one, or the top 10 if we have one, or we're going to take a quarterback in the top 15.
His play will affect either way. Like, his play will affect.
Correct.
We'll say, right?
And if he's he's not ready, that'll speak for itself. Yeah. So you do need to draft one. But if it the thought of just you got to draft a quarterback in the top 10 after taking one in the third round, who was in the third round because of a small sample size, a knee injury, a COVID-19 season, I mean – There's to me, that would be a major mistake by the Texans, is to just go, I don't care what Davis Mills does this year. We're going to use a first round pick next year, wherever it may land. It could be top five. It could be 12. It could be who knows where it's going to land. It could be one first round draft pick. It could be three or four. Who knows with the Deshaun Watson situation? But to go, oh, well, with one of our first round draft picks next year, we're taking a quarterback. I mean, that would be a major, major mistake if Davis Mills ends up – he didn't even have to play well, to be completely honest with you. We talked about it yesterday. Like, if he convinces this organization behind the scenes as an inactive quarterback, if he convinces this organization that he's the dude, then
– that will impact.
Then they can't afford to just waste a first-round pick. They can't afford to waste their two most premium picks in two consecutive years while they're rebuilding, while they're an absolute dumpster fire, on quarterbacks. You can't afford to do it just because, right? Just because the other guy was a third rounder and because he had a small sample size of college. You can't do it.
Yeah.
Now, you got to do everything. In fact, I'll say that's their number one priority this year. You got to do everything that you can with Davis Mills this year to put yourself in a position next year to go, okay, I know what the hell we got to do with the first round pick.
If he comes out and he has a season and impresses you like Justin Herbert did, you know what you got to do.
No question.
If he comes out and has the season the way that Tua had, you know what you got to do.
Right. And look, and Tua won the majority of the games that he was in. They won.
Well, he won them, but you looked at him.
Yeah, you looked at him and he was like, hey, my man's handcuffed right now. Well, yeah. For whatever reason,
can upgrade.
Right, we can
upgrade. Potentially upgrade and get somebody.
That's a perfect example, because you look at Miami. You can say Tua was handcuffed. I mean, you could say that he struggled as much as we've ever seen a top 10 quarterback struggle in his first year, when you know there were some good things going on around him because they had 10 wins. But Miami still didn't draft another quarterback this year and had the opportunity.
Yeah.
Right?
They moved out a couple of times.
Right. So, to think that Davis Mills with the Houston Texans isn't going to impact the way they draft next year in the first round, I think is a major mistake.
Yeah. Couple of news notes coming through. Justin Verlander, we'll let you hear from his own mouth. He gives an update on where he is. We'll let you hear that coming up as well. The Texans make a move. Nick Caserio and company bring in linebacker from the Jets, Neville Hewitt. We heard he visited yesterday, and they've gone ahead and signed a one-year deal, according to his agent, Drew Rosenhaus. Coming up, Justin Verlander. He speaks and gives an update from his own words. That's next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show.
Houston Astros pitcher and future Hall of Famer Justin Verlander spoke to the media and gives an update on where he is. Here is Justin Verlander.
I'm throwing at 90 feet right now, feeling great. Timeline, you know, impossible. I'm literally just taking it. I know it sounds cliche, but, you know, one day at a time. And I mean, I've been Yeah. The timeline's impossible. I have to listen to my doctors. I have to listen to my body. But the hard thing about this is it's one of those surgeries that they told me you can't overpush it, which is against my nature, right? I always try to, like, you know, anytime I've been injured in the past, it's like, okay, what can I do to get back as quick as possible? This time is like, hey, you need to make sure you follow the protocols and not try to get too far ahead of yourself, because you can really ruin the whole surgery. And we're looking at, you know, the end of a career. So first and foremost, I want to make sure I hit every check mark every step of the way and not try to look too far ahead.
That is Justin Verlander. He is not retiring. Those may have gotten nervous like myself. He is not shutting it down. But he does give an update, no timetable. He said this is an injury they say you don't want to push. I bet you he's pushing. I bet you he's trying to push some of those limits to try to get back, because he seems like, as I said, the type that wants to get back as soon as possible. But there is a Verlander, no real timetable, Clint, but he seems to be on track.
Yeah, look, man, when I think about the Astros and Tommy John, I immediately go to McCullers, right? And McCullers,
yeah.
I remember us talking about it being an 18-month ordeal for him. And so I immediately wonder, okay, well, what is that for everybody? Is that typical? What is the situation? I'm looking at Brian McTaggart right now, an article that he wrote on MLB.com. And, you know, he's talking about Justin Verlander addressing this particular situation. And the recovery time is 12 to 14 months. I'm sorry, he was actually talking to Justin Verlander back in October when the surgery occurred. But he states in there that the recovery time is 12 to 14 months. And you just assume at that point, well, he won't pitch again until the 2022 season. But, you know, I look at this and go, if the recovery month, just off the cuff, generally speaking, is 12 to 14 months, who's to say that a guy like Verlander can't push it a little bit and possibly take the mound for the Astros again?
I will stand by this. At his age, where he is and where this team is, I believe Justin Verlander is saying to himself, "Boys, just get me to the playoffs. Just get to the postseason, and I'm just gonna see if I can at least be a bullpen arm." Didn't Lance give some innings?
Yes.
Yes.
In the playoffs. He gave. Now, he didn't start, but he gave some innings.
He gave several quality innings on a couple of two or three different outings. Yes.
Yes. That's
absolutely.
I honestly believe Verlander, as you said, that not push it, but I believe he's get me to the postseason.
Now, he did it before he had surgery, not after, right, Tyler?
Yeah, I think
McCullers did it before. He pushed it with the injury.
It wasn't
post surgery with McCullers.
Okay. Well, that is the latest on Justin Verlander throwing not on the mound quite yet, but throwing 90 feet and right on track, but doesn't give a timetable.
I'm going World Series. In his mind, get him to the World, get to the World Series, and I may consider.
If they get in the I don't believe Justin Verlander, Clint, has ended his season. I don't think in his mind, I don't think in Verlander's mind, his season's over. I think Verlander is pushing, not for the 22 season. I think he is pushing for, if they get into the postseason,
yeah,
I want to be a bullpen.
It is a bit interesting if he's, like, why address the media? Like, why address your rehab if there wasn't some kind of itching to get back on the field.
Yeah, I just can't. Yeah, because I think GM Dusty could have just given an update here. Like, I know there are a lot of people who have been wondering about, hey, where is Verlander at? And I guess they just say, well, let's bring him out and let him give the update. But I don't know. Yeah, there is something to the thinking of maybe this just doesn't mean his season
right.
is over with it. Justin Verlander gives his latest update there, and we'll continue to monitor that situation and see where he is. Clint Sterner in the show here with you on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. I know what you do in your routine when you drive in here. You drive and you're listening to In the Loop.
You listen to
Landry and listening to Lopez. And Lopez said something that at least caught your ears, that made you immediately have to message us. And that was him speaking about Davis Mills And I'm saying the worst case scenario, Clint, would be if Davis Mills goes 7-3. If he starts 10 games and he goes 7-3, to be fair, the thought would be in that short sample size, 7-3 would almost make you feel like we've got our quarterback and that we don't need to move and the evaluation is done there. And you could still draft a top quarterback with a pick and trade him and get more value.
Yeah.
But it seems like just the fear of him performing and at least them winning 7 games out of 10 could be the worst case scenario.
Yeah, look, and I understand where the OG was coming from a standpoint of because that would if he goes 7-3, that would push you out of the top 10, obviously.
Yes.
That would lead you to believe that Davis Mills is the future, and I guess John doesn't think that highly of Davis Mills, or thinks that would be too small of a sample size to decide to make that decision. I thought it was great food for thought. Ultimately, I mean, him and Lockdog had a good back and forth on it. I was laughing the whole way in. They were both trying to convince each other of the opposite. It was good stuff, but it just got me to thinking. Like, what is Davis Mills? What can he do? And when I heard the record 7-3 thrown out there, I thought, hey, lock it up and throw away the key. He's your quarterback. I mean, Davis Mills goes if he gets 10 starts, which I don't think that's likely, and if he goes 7-3, which I know is not very likely, with this group, this is the key, right? This isn't the New England Patriots drafting a quarterback early in the draft because they're already winning double-digit games and they're making a run. Like, if they don't make a run to the AFC Championship game, it's a down year for them. So they waste a second-round pick or what? I don't remember when they drafted Jimmy G, but it was early. It was second or third round, right? And then you can flip him later on if Brady stays healthy. That's not where the Texans are, right? And then, by the way, if Jimmy G gets in when Brady gets hurt, then Jimmy G goes and wins 3 or 4 games and his value goes through the roof. That's not where the Texans are, right? Anybody that wins 7 games with this group, with this organization, where they're at right now, top to bottom, I'm not talking about just the roster, I'm not talking about just David Culley, the coaching staff, any quarterback that wins 7 or more games with this crew right here should be given the keys as the starter of this organization.
Well, Clint, I think it's got to be dependent on how the 7 games go, right? Like, Tim Tebow won a bunch of games, right? And they just, I mean, the defense was fantastic. There were just, it would seemingly things out of nowhere would occur to help
right.
them win
that's,
games.
That's my point. You expect this defense to play fantastic?
I'm just saying it just has to in some way it's got to depend on how he plays. Because to me,
the point is we know Von Miller and them boys ain't trotting out there for Houston. We know that's not going to be a top 10 defense and be a defense that can go get the quarterback. If he wins 7 games, my whole point in saying is if he wins 7 games, he's going to have to overcome a coaching staff that has no identity
so
and no leader.
You can't see them winning 7 games.
No,
with
hell
him
no.
Without him over, like him being the reason that they win 7 games. If that is the case, I'm just saying. I'm just thinking. Tim Tebow, Tua. If they win 7 games the way that those quarterbacks played, then that to me wouldn't say give him the keys. If they win 7 games in a way where, hey, this dude, like you're saying, he is the reason. You can clearly see, like, he is making parts around him better. He's the reason that this team won 7 games. Then I'm in it, right?
Well, that's the only way that he goes 7-3, bro. I mean, look, if Lovie Smith trots a defense out there that's top 10 next year, and then I'll just have to eat crow, and they win 7 or 8 or 9 games.
Maybe Shaq Lawson really comes on.
Yeah, because of that defense? Well, hell, I guess I'm going to have to eat crow on that deal. But when I look, if Davis Mills, if Davis Mills wins 7 games with this football team and this coaching staff and the dysfunction that is, give it. He's the guy. He deserves it. You at that point there. You have to use your other draft picks to add to a 7-win football team and get them to double digits.
If they appear to be as dysfunctional as they have been. Or as bad as maybe we anticipate the defense being, Yeah, man, I just, it just has to, like, we just have to watch the games of how they won seven. If they have acts of gods occur, like Tim Tebow had in about four or five of his wins, where people are just fumbling out of nowhere under 2 minutes, not being touched, that's a difference. But, like you're saying, if he is, he's completing 65% of his passes, and he is showing the talent that you thought, whew, all right, I'm with you. It's just depending on how it goes. We've been hearing this a lot. Why? What has the general manager done to Aaron Rodgers? Why does Aaron Rodgers, he being a big baby, want to be out of Green Bay? Well, there is a clear example of why exactly Aaron Rodgers feels the way he does. We'll tell you what that is next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
All right, a lot of people talk about, which is becoming even as big a story as Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for the Packers, wanting out. A lot of people, Clint, get to a point of why? What did the GM do? Why, like, we start to give these players power of wanting a GM fired? And I saw Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, with this tweet, Clint, and it said, "The draft is an ultimate what if. In 2020, Packers GM Brian Gutekunst targeted a wide receiver. He tried to trade up to get LSU wide receiver Justin Jefferson, only to see Minnesota take him. He watched the 49ers trade up to get Arizona State wide receiver Brandon Ayuk, another target. Then Green Bay went ahead and traded up to get Jordan Love." When I just read all of that, to think what the Packers were coming off of, losing in the NFC Championship game, which everyone looked at and thought they just don't have enough weapons.
Right.
The GM is targeting a wide receiver. They can't go up.
Not once, but twice.
Twice. And we saw Justin Jefferson, Clint. What would that Packers team look like if they had Justin Jefferson along the other side of Adams?
There's no question about it. Aaron Rodgers would have a hard time bitching about his weapons. That's for dang sure. In this draft you're specifically talking about, too, it's worth mentioning, Justin Jefferson fell in this draft. He fell all the way to Minnesota. He fell into Minnesota's lap, so there was plenty of opportunity to go, hey, he's fallen. Let's bump up and let's trade
they
up. And,
they said they targeted him.
Right.
The GM said
when
he
your target starts falling and you still don't get him.
Yes. And it's not like you don't – they're picked 29. It's not like they had to move up 20 spots to get him.
What Justin end up going?
22.
22?
Yeah. Right? All you got to do is get in front of him. And you're targeting him. You're in win now Super Bowl mode. And the guy you've targeted in the draft is falling and you can go get him. And you don't go get him. And you said you're targeting wide receiver. And the rest of it is, you don't even, they had 9 other selections in the draft. They never even drafted a wide receiver. With the other 9.
And that was that, if I remember correctly, that year's draft was Clinton. Wide receiver heavy, wasn't it?
Yes. John McClain, who'll be on with us at the 4 o'clock hour, said this is the best wide receiver draft in like 20, 30 years. I remember him telling us that. And yeah, in the second round, Claypool goes with Pittsburgh.
You had two of the Alabama kids go super early.
Yeah, but in the second round, even after these, Pittman goes to the Colts. And Claypool goes to the Steelers, and there's another player. T. Higgins goes to the Bengals. We saw him kill the Texans when they came here. And they never draft one. So the plan was, let's go in and target a wide receiver. How's the fallback plan move up in the draft to go draft a quarterback? And you're like, oh, Aaron Rodgers, man, why would he want the GM? Why would he have a problem with it? Like, they're trying to win a championship.
Yeah.
And you can't get up 7 spots to go get a guy you targeted?
Well, yeah, and you wonder, you don't move. You wouldn't even have to move 7 spots. Is that what it was? You wouldn't even have to move 7 spots to get Brandon Ayuk. I mean, you could have got a quality, high-level wide receiver with that late first-round pick on several different occasions if that was indeed what you wanted to do is to draft a wide receiver. How about when you fast forward, Aaron goes back to work and he's a good soldier, and you fast forward to how they lost again this year, kicking a field goal down 8 points at the end of the game, expecting never seeing the football again.
I'm sorry.
Come on, man.
I watched Justin Jefferson with Adam Thielen on one side, and I think Adam Thielen's a really good receiver, and Kirk Cousins as his quarterback. I think the Green Bay Packers have the weapon that they need. I think they beat Tampa Bay. if Justin Jefferson is with that team, with Aaron and Adams on the other, Davante Adams on the other side.
Yeah.
Like, they just, if you remember in that game, Aaron was just forcing it.
Sure.
To Adams. Like, just the coverage rolled to him, just forcing it to Adams to try to, and I just, it just, like, you have to, if you're Aaron, we're in championship mode.
Yeah.
What we need, it's right there. Go get it.
Well, there's so many layers to this, though, Show. It is interesting when I hear people say, why would Aaron Rodgers be mad? You just laid it out that you didn't have enough weapons in 19 in the NFC Championship.
You said you're targeting a
wide receiver. You say you're targeting. That part even makes it worse, because you say you're targeting wide receiver.
You never did.
And then you draft his replacement. So clearly you weren't targeting his replacement. You just looked up and said, hey, this is pretty good. This quarterback right here is pretty damn good. He's the best available. Let's go ahead and take him. So that's one of those, like, that's a double whammy for the Green Bay Packers there. And then if you fast forward it even more, is this year, the way this year's season ended, everybody goes, oh, well, you got a great team. You're good enough to go to the NFC Championship twice. That's not what Aaron's thinking. Aaron looks at that. You and I look at it like, damn, Green Bay had a pretty damn good run. Man, hey, Aaron Rodgers playing his best ball, MVP.
Back-to-back.
Aaron Rodgers looks at it, Show, and goes, I don't give a damn about an MVP. I don't care about getting to the NFC Championship game. I'm old, man. I'm trying to win another Super Bowl before I get up out of here. I've been one play away. Maybe not last year. They got beat pretty good last year or 2 years ago. But this year, I'm one play away from tying this joker up and getting a chance to go, and I don't have answers. Again. After it happened last year, and after they had opportunities. And then you fast forward, and what the hell did they do this year? First round corner.
Stokes.
So, I mean, you can disagree if you want to, but it ain't real hard to figure out why Aaron Rodgers is mad. Like, if you just want to generalize and in 30,000 foot view, oh man, that they're a good football team. They got to be a good football team. Because they made it that far twice and they won so many games. Yeah, you can do all that if you want to. But ultimately, it's about winning championships. And it's very easy to look at Green Bay and go, the reason, or a very good reason why Green Bay was not able to keep up with San Francisco. Was San Francisco 2 years ago?
Yeah, they beat the hell out of them.
And why were they not able to, at the end of the game, tie it up against Tampa this year? It's very easy.
They just couldn't. They could not. They could not get off. Get complete third down.
They didn't have enough dudes.
And
they didn't have answers. I mean, Aaron Rodgers and a good scheme.
Aaron's over there looking at the other side. Hey, man, big third downs. What does Tom have at his disposal?
Come on, man.
Mike Evans.
Come on, man.
Antonio Brown.
Godwin.
Gronk.
Brait. I mean, they went out and got Leonard Fournette to add to Jones in the backfield.
Like, big third downs, what do you have?
Yeah.
He's got to be looking over there, and I got Davante Adams and some kid from Iowa State, and St. Pierre or whatever his name is. Like, and that has to rub it in even more. But, like, it's just a simple fact of, all right, this is the GM. This is the guy I'm depending on to lead, to help me get the parts to win. We walk into a draft with the goal and the target wide receiver.
Yeah,
we ended up drafting 9 players. None of them are wide receivers.
And a quarterback and a big-legged running back.
And somehow the game plan changes from targeting wide receivers to quarterback, to move up to get quarterback. Yeah. Like, come on, man. You got to question it. Like we said, man, you see what Tom has. He looks around and goes, all right, man, the Chiefs, they seem to have issues with Patrick Mahomes. Well, what do they go do? They absolutely – some may say over-address their issue at offensive line. Like, that's not going to happen to them again. They get him weapons. You look at Aaron, you just got to be like, come on, man. Come on. You understand.
If you think about, Aaron's done everything in the game except win multiple Super Bowls, and that's ultimately all he gives a rip about at this point in time, and it's easy to look back and go, oh, well, they got close, and, boy, that's good enough. Well, that's not how Aaron's looking at it. Aaron's looking at it like, damn it, if y'all would have gave me another weapon, we'd have been able to draw up in the dirt.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have been able to possibly tie that thing up against Tampa late and get into overtime or get into, a last-second field goal situation to win that thing if we got the ball back. And that's That's ultimately why the dude's pissed off, and it's fairly easy to arrive at that place. Yeah.
Terry Bradshaw can miss me. With he can completely miss
would
me.
Would it revert, Terry?
That's right.
That's right, Terry. All right, Clint Sterner and the show here with you on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. Remember, John McClain is up with us in the 4 o'clock hour. The general is always there on Fridays with us. I know this is a touchy subject for Clint Sterner, who has disagreed with this from the jump. But the NFL Players Association president for the players, J.C. Treader, center for the Cleveland Browns, he had this this to say on the Pat McAfee show, discussing around players not potentially showing up during the off-season and not showing up to facilities.
Originally, the NFL wanted to make these OTAs mandatory. They wanted the entire offseason to be mandatory. And we negotiated, collectively bargained, to make sure they were voluntary. And what we've seen over the last decade is near 100% participation in the offseason, in the voluntary offseason program. And then COVID came around last year and nobody went in and football was fine and players were fine. They were healthier. And now guys look around and say, why am I volunteering my off time to show up to the facility when it just was proven I don't have to? And we surveyed the players to see kind of what do you want in an off season? And over 70% said we want to stay virtual. The league has gotten used to us all showing up and it being pseudo mandatory. And for the first time in a long time, maybe ever, they've had their players tell them no, and I'm not going. And it's ruffled some feathers and they're not happy about it. And this is where we're at now.
All right. That's J.C. Treader, the NFL Players Association president. You've been a part of the Players Association, Clint, and this is a story that just seems to really frustrate you.
Yeah, look, I just the NFLPA doubling down on these their original statement that they put out encouraging players to boycott off-season voluntary workouts. The whole thought process of them co-signing that is absolutely silly to me. I mean, I understand why veterans that are long in the tooth, 10 years, got family elsewhere, got their routine. They may or may not. I still don't understand why you wouldn't want to be with your team and in the city where you are employed and where you're playing ball. But I can understand where there are some veterans out there that would prefer not to work out with the team in the off season. But to encourage the entire NFL. The body of players to boycott the voluntary workouts and essentially not be there, not report, I've said it before, it's absolutely silly, right? You've got rookies, first year, second year, third year guys, first contract guys, free agents that absolutely need that time at the facility to get ready to potentially win a job, one of very few spots that will be available. There's 75%+ of the roster absolutely needs to be with the organization working out for one reason or another. And the J.C. Treader, just him coming out and doubling down on Pat McAfee's show, he said several things. He spoke at length. And it's just very, very interesting because it seems to me like there was one part in there where they polled the players that have been in the NFL for two seasons now. So they've had one season of regular NFL the way it's always been, and then they had one season of virtual offseason. And they polled those players, and 70%+ said that they would rather be virtual, right? So first and second year players, what they think has never mattered in the NFL to veterans. Or to organizations or to the NFL. Has never. They have no voice whatsoever, right? No, it shouldn't. ultimately, big picture, they shouldn't have a whole hell of a lot of say-so in the way business is conducted. But when 70% of the league is young players, there's no doubt about it that you can't pick and choose when you want to use their opinion. Like they all of a sudden their opinion is important enough to where you want to throw it around in defense of what the NFLPA negotiated and what they're encouraging people to boycott. You want to use that stat because it's 70 plus, now when it's convenient, but you don't really give a rip what the first and second year players have to say or want one way or another. Like, you don't give a rip. You never have. Like, I didn't walk into there. There's more guys like me than there are $15 million a year guys. I didn't walk in that league and Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith go, hey, Clint, man, how do you feel about our practice schedule? How do you feel about having to report July whatever for a rookie minicamp? They don't give a damn, never have, right? But now it's convenient for the NFLPA, and it's convenient for the veterans that are the reps. It's convenient for them to go, oh, well, we polled these guys and they want virtual, right? To me, this is the NFLPA, and not just from this perspective, but multiple perspectives. This is the NFLPA, and this is the handful of veteran players that probably should be able to work out wherever the hell they want to and it not be held against them. But it's that group of individuals conveniently using the guys, the first, second-year players, first contract players, that they're the generation of, well, you can't tell me what to do. That's what we're living in. You can't tell me what to do. You don't own me. I'm an employee. It's my offseason. You can't tell me what to do. That generation of players, the veterans in NFLPA are taking advantage of. Like, y'all, it's the they can't tell you what to do. No, in reality, what the NFLPA should be doing and what the veterans should be doing is telling them young players, get your ass over there to Kirby. Get you. They'll put you up. The team pays for your hotel. It doesn't cost you a dime. They feed you. It doesn't cost you a dime. Get your ass to Houston. Get over there to NRG. I don't care if there's 40 or 50 of them. Get over there. Get in the weight room. Get in the meeting room. Get ready to help us win a ball game next year. Get ready to help us make a run. Get ready to help us rebuild. And instead, they're encouraging them to boycott. Why? Because it's convenient for them. For no other reason.
But you feel like those young players at the end, in the end, are ultimately the ones that are going to get hurt the most out of this, or going to get affected.
No question. There's no, now you got the one off, right? You got the one off where this veteran lineman got hurt, and all of a sudden it could hurt him financially. But in the past, what's always happened in the past, this other interesting part about this is, like, in the past, players get hurt. I heard somebody reference Ben Roethlisberger getting hurt in a motorcycle accident, and the Steelers stayed with him, paid him his money, just kept on keeping on like it was no big deal. Really, that's a non-football injury. That, remember Jay Williams, the basketball player,
yeah, like
it crushed him financially because of what he did,
yeah.
Right? But you, the Steelers stood by Ben and paid Ben, right? So if the players want to go, oh, well, the owners are used to all of us just showing up and being 100%, 100% there for the team and being there every day, they're just used to that, and now we're ruffling feathers. Well, as players, you're used to teams paying players regardless of injuries and regardless of the verbiage that's in the contract, right? And now there's a situation on the table now that a player could possibly not get paid. So it's just – to me, it's silly. I can't believe that the NFLPA is doubling down on it. And the more I hear about it, it just frustrates the hell out of me. Really, show it frustrates the hell out of me because I know, and the veterans should know that the veterans know what the hell it takes to win ball games, and players being spread out all over the country until a week before training camp starts. That's not it. I mean, that's not that you ain't gonna win ball games doing that.
The Astros got some great news, potentially great news, from their highest paid player. We'll discuss that coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning.
MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field. It's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.